Well, as we said, the Occupy movement is denouncing these self-proclaimed anarchists, but they may have some of the same complaints, and our next guest says they should. Because he says, when you think about the great divide in America, you might think Republican, Democrat, male, female, black, white. But Stephen Marsh says you should think young versus old. He says the last 30 years of economic and social policy has been rigged to serve the comfort and largesse of the old at the expense of the young, that baby boomers are gutting the prospects of America's youth. Stephen makes these points in a provocative essay in the latest edition of Esquire magazine. It's entitled The War Against Youth. 20,000 people on Facebook have liked it, but at least one critic says the essay distracts young people from the real threats to their economic security, that if they pick up this clarion call, they might be fighting the wrong army. So let's bring in Stephen Marsh. He joins us online, and we should say you're not one of the millennials, one of the generation you write about, you know, living at home, piling up college debt. You are 36.
Yeah, I'm 36. I'm not of this younger generation, so I'm definitely looking at it sort of as a disinterested third party, if you will.
Well, but a sympathetic one. You say generational conflict is something no one talks about, because who wants to bring up that the old are eating the young when you're all sitting around the dinner table? So start making your case. Let's start with one statistic you cite. You talk about the assets of older Americans in 1984 as opposed to 2008. Talk about that.
Well, in 1984, the asset difference between people over 65 and people younger than 35 was 10 to 1, and now it's 47 to 1. So that's a shocking statistic. But what I really wanted to do in this piece is try and understand, A, why was this happening, and B, sort of what does it mean?
But, you know, we have to stay with the statistics for a second, because that is a shocking statistic, that Americans over 65 had 10 times more in assets as those under 35 and 84, and then 47 times more in 2008. That's a lot. But as you probably know, people are looking at that stat, and progressive Richard Eskow of Campaign for America's Future says that's misstating that stat, that in fact virtually all of the difference between 1984 and 2008 can be accounted for by home values, which of course went through the roof. So in fact, you know, you might have millions more in 2008, but it's the value of your home, and you can't sell it, and you can't, you know, it's an amorphous thing.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure what difference that makes to the people who don't have houses. I mean, real estate is the major way that the middle class has wealth, so I don't know what difference that makes to the situation. Also, I mean, you know, the reason that there is this huge gap is also because of, like, for example, in federal government spending, $7 goes to over 65 for every $1 that goes to under 12s. That's the shocking statistic, but I don't think that's really the important thing. The question here is, how much opportunity do young people have? The really shocking statistics is that only 54% of under 24s are employed right now, which is the lowest number that there has been since they started keeping statistics. 85% of college graduates had to move back home. This is a massive cultural shift. You know, the way to look at this, I think a lot of people have imposed on these statistics, these old economic models of right versus left. You know, the money is really not what is terrible, because I don't really think that most Americans care. They don't feel that people who are wealthy aren't entitled to their wealth. But a country where people don't have opportunity, where young people don't have opportunities, surely that's a country that nobody wants to live in.
Well, right? But tell us a little more about your thinking that, as you say, the money is going to help the old die comfortably, not to help the young grow. Give us some more examples.
There are programs like, for example, the prescription drug amendment that Bush put in, which cost $60 billion, compared to Pell Grants, which get cut, you know, every year and have also been restricted under Obama. These are policies that have a reaction. Also, you know, for example, in unions, it is starting to infiltrate into the manufacturing sector, where older workers, boomer workers, keep their union wages, you know, $35 to $42 an hour, and younger workers get $17 an hour, and it's a split system, and the younger workers will never see the wages of their older compatriots. This is what is called being globally competitive. That's just one example. The amount of tuition, a medical school graduate in 1990 had an average of $25,000 in debt. Now the average is 157. So we've made this decision to have all entry to the middle class made with these massive quantities of debt. That affects the earning potential of young people forever. And it seems like, well, it's a doctor, does it, what does it matter? But that basically means that even if you're a doctor, even if you're the highest skilled professional you can be, you're not really beginning to have any assets until you're 40. This has not only economic consequences, it has enormous cultural consequences, political consequences.
But do you think that this is a generational thing, or is this a political thing? Again, referring to David Eskow, he says it's Republicans who pushed for the tax cuts that, in his view, have caused such disaster in the economy. So is this a boomer versus the young, or is this politics?
Well, you know, I mean, there are two answers to that question, because on one side, you're quite right. Like, a young person voting for a Republican is really like a chicken voting for Colonel Sanders. It's like it has no – it's just an interest group question. I mean, like, David Frum called the Tea Party, like, a going out of business sale for the boomers. You know, not only that, but the state Republicans are trying to disenfranchise young people through these voting reform acts, which the ACLU calls, you know, the worst, most egregious voting reform acts since the 60s. I mean, this is really – that it is very clear that the Republicans are anti-youth. Now, there's absolutely no necessary reason why that should be so. If you look at the statistics from the National Center for Education Statistics about what young people are like, so, you know, how they value having a job, being close to family, it's shocking to me anyway, because they're so much more conservative than their parents were. In instinct, in attitudes towards personal responsibility, in attitudes towards whether you should try and fix the world or whether you should look after your own family, things like this.
So you're saying they should be natural Republicans and the Republican Party should be
taking that? 85% of young people believe that they will never see Social Security. So I think there is a huge possibility of appeal for young Republicans. It's just this active anti-interest group.
So you assign some blame to Republicans, but you say Democrats are, well, in effect, have been too scared and weak. They may have the young best interest at heart, but they do nothing about it. They don't speak up.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say it is very hard to apportion blame, like in the last budget process and so on. I mean, it is genuinely hard to find out what, like, who is responsible for cutting what and what sacrifices were made. I mean, I will say that if you look at how the millennials view Obama and the level of hope they feel in Obama, I mean, it basically falls off the edge of a cliff, right? I mean, it goes from 63% before the election to, I think, 37% last spring. I mean, it really, really declines pretty speedily, and I think that's because they know they're not being taken care of.
That's Esquire magazine columnist Stephen Marsh on what he calls the war against youth. We mentioned at least one critic, Robert Eskow, who says Stephen's essay and the big advertiser-backed Esquire magazine that carried it are actually hell-bent on promoting the right-wing framing that says the most urgent issue is cutting deficit spending, and Social Security is pushing that agenda. And Rich Robert says the real divide is between the very rich and everyone else, and there's no mention in Stephen's essay of that. Well, Stephen poo-poos all that, and he says he has other examples of what he calls the war on youth, unpaid internships, referenced here on the ABC sitcom Apartment 23.
Miss Berman, if you give me this opportunity, I will show you how committed I am to Berman, Marks, and Mathers.
Even though this is an unpaid internship, it requires 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. Okay. When I sleep, which is rare, I do so standing up like a cow.
My time is yours. I'm single, I don't have any pets, and my only hobby is the seasonal raising of window box pansies.
Stop it.
I will.
Excellent.
Our intern's part of a war on youth. More with Stephen Marsh in 1 minute, here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at mathworks.com.
Welcome back. We're talking about what Esquire magazine writer Stephen Marsh is calling a war against youth. He says the old are eating the young economically, and he cites these stats. He says since the recession, 1 in 4 young Americans have moved back in with their parents. They've postponed getting married or having children. He says their voting power has been undermined. More than 30 states are moving forward with Republican initiatives requiring IDs in order to vote, while 18% of young people don't have current photo IDs. There are also moves underway to restrict the voting rights of people with out-of-state IDs, and that includes many college students. And then there was that spat over interest rates on student loans. Republicans were against keeping them low before they were for it in that recent congressional vote. But Stephen Marsh, you just told us you blame policymakers in both parties for what you call this war against youth. And you also take aim at employers who have, you say, feasted on despair through unpaid internships.
Well, I mean, internships is one of the greatest, like Germany has made them illegal, right? I mean, Germany has decided that they are not going to allow these anymore. They have apprenticeship programs in which young people are paid, in which they are nurtured for jobs they can have. That is a responsible approach.
Why? Make us think more about internships. We have interns sitting down
the
hall.
In 1980, 3% of graduates had gone through an internship. It was virtually unheard of. It was Washington and maybe the highest Wall Street firms, things like that. Now, virtually everyone goes through multiple stages of internship. I must say, when I got calls from young people, that is what they wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
You know, that was the thing that really, really resonated with them. You know, your work is not worth any money. If you can't get a middle-class job without having to work for free for a year, that creates an enormous economic barrier to getting a decent job. Like, you have to have parents who can support you for a year or go into more and more debt. This is not sustainable.
Well, you also say it feeds into the cycle we started with. The more and more Business America can have interns do work for free, the less they'll hire. Why should they hire?
Disney has 7,000 interns, okay? I mean, does it really not have any money to pay young people to do the kind of starter jobs that people used to have all the time? Even I remember them. You know, I mean, even I'm 36, remember, like, jobs delivering coffee where they paid you.
Yeah. Well, Stephen Marsh, again, you talk about this as a war on young people. Some people would assign, by the way, Disney having 7,000 interns as opposed to paying workers, some people would assign that to something else, to the arrogance and selfishness of corporate America. I mean, some people would not assign that to a generational war. But either way, what would you suggest be done about this?
The solutions are not actually that complicated. Like, don't raise tuition. Don't make it so that every American student graduates with $32,000 in debt. I mean, I saw barons, of all places, talking about how in Europe this is dragging down the economy because, you know, 18 to 34-year-olds basically can't afford to buy anything anymore. You know, like, things like car manufacturers are trying to figure out how to get young people to buy cars, but they can't because they don't have any money.
But how does this happen? Is it, you know, pressure from young people who, you know, have started to take to the streets and things like the Occupy movement? Is it Washington? Who tells colleges to lower tuitions?
Well, I think Occupy is actually a really fascinating case. They have never brought up any kind of generational angst or anything like that. But it seems to me that the primary question they're talking about, which is the, you know, not having opportunities, basically comes down to this question. I don't have an answer to that. I really don't. I mean, Obama had a lot of hope, and that was kind of wrecked. I think the answer will be the boomers moving on. That's kind of a horrible answer to give, but I think that's probably the truth.
You're going to have to wait about 20 years.
20 years, I guess. Is that long? Yeah.
What about one other thought? I mean, you're talking about older versus younger. Progressive economist Dean Baker of the Center for Economic and Policy Research says, what matters for intergenerational equity is the overall state of the economy and the physical and natural infrastructure that we hand down to future generations. You know, this idea that, in fact, it's not even the deficit that matters. We need to spend now. We need to build infrastructure. We need to leave that behind. And a good economy for everyone is a good economy for young people.
Oh, that's true. It's just that we're in a state right now where 54% of under 24s are unemployed. I mean, that's the reality of the situation. And that situation is not accidental. That situation is the result of very conscious policies taken over the past 30 years. Yeah, I mean, intergenerational war, you know, I call it that because I wanted it to be very clear that this is the result of action. This is not some demographic accident. This is not something that just happened. This is something that happened because people made conscious decisions that made it happen. But on the other hand, you know, I think one of the things that's really interesting about this particular generational conflict is that there's actually not a lot of animosity in it. I mean, I don't get the sense that young people even hate their elders' music or anything, you know? I mean, there's not even any kind of cultural
poor things.
Angst. There's certainly no, like, personal angst, right? It's not like, oh, God, I hate those guys, which is something I find, frankly, a bit confusing, but nonetheless true.
But, Stephen, you know, you are 36. Maybe one of the reasons is that there is a government safety net, as opposed to before the 50s and 60s, when the elderly had to live at home with their children. It was the other way around, and there was no help. And doesn't the fact that we do have this social safety net, Social Security, Medicare, doesn't this, in effect, help the young people today? Because it takes some of that burden off them. And having to pay, emergency room costs for what now
Social Security was, I'm not sure it does. I mean, I know people with elderly parents who are under a lot of pressure. But, I mean, the truth is, when Social Security was founded, there were 35 working people for every one retired person. And now it's 3 to 1. So that is just a fundamentally different reality.
Yeah. We still are caring for elderly parents today, even with the government aid.
If you get through your parents' death with just government aid, I think you're doing pretty great.
Yeah. Stephen Marsh, columnist for Esquire magazine, who wrote the article, The War Against Youth. It appears in the current issue. We'll link you at hereandnow.org. Thank you so much. A pleasure.
It's a pleasure.
Okay, so now I'm expecting our interns to come running down the hall with pitchforks. So what about you? Do you feel this war against youth, or are you a boomer, maybe working till you drop because your savings were depleted in the financial collapse, and maybe you think you're being unfairly blamed for waging this war? Weigh in, hereandnow.org, or on Twitter at hereandnow, or at hereandnowrobin, sorry, forgot to tweet today, or on facebook.com/hereandnowradio. Love to hear from you. Latest news is next, Here and Now.
Support for Here and Now comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced, and by Harvard University, whose Harvard Extension School has online and on-campus courses for students around the world, extension.harvard.edu, and by the Institute of Contemporary Art Boston with Figuring Color, exploring the expressive power of color in paintings and sculpture, icaboston.org.